This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Man, good morning, everybody. We got a short show. We just found out that we got to go to the Liberty Bowl at 10, so we're only going to be here for 1 hour. It's been a normal time, but Happy New Year, everybody. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with some headlines. Well, last night, the Pac-12 continues to play bad in bowl games. Ohio State beat USC 24-7. That means the Pac-10 is now 1-7 in bowl games. That's embarrassing. I mean, absolutely horrible to see how bad things are. And so now today, to try to reverse things, Washington takes on Penn State. That game at 1 o'clock in the Fiesta Bowl. So at least maybe there's some hope that something can go right for the Pac-12 because it's been pretty bad. But some good news on the basketball front. Washington was able to go on the road to USC, get an 88-81 victory. And so now they're, and of course, that was a road victory. They're like lost so many road games all last year. They're 0-9 in conference play on the road. And so apparently, I think they got a pretty good new coach. The record's now 11-3. They play UCLA tomorrow. As far as the National Football League, a couple coaching maneuvers. Kind of surprising. 2-year extension for Todd Bowles and the general manager Mike Maccagnan with the New York Jets. Then you had the news that looks like John Gruden's not coming back into coaching this year. That's because a deal was struck, or at least they told no coaching change down there. So that at least keeps two openings. And I think maybe some owners are starting to recognize there's not enough assistants out there or head coaches out there to be able to hire. As far as Seahawk news, still looks pretty good as far as Bobby Wagner being able to play. Nas Jones is going to be out for the game. Luke Joeckel is going to be a game-time decision. Arizona, of course, coming into town tomorrow in a big game for Seattle. Seattle needs to win. If they win, they have a chance to make the playoffs, and that's, of course, if Carolina beats the Atlanta Falcons. And, of course, those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Clayton. Happy New Year's to you and yours, my friend.
Well, thank you. Happy New Year to you, too.
All right. Hey, let's get to it right quick. Tell me, how can the Rams, if the Rams lose tomorrow and if the Saints win, are the Rams locked into that third?
If the Rams lose, which right now looks like they're going to play only backups, that gives the Saints a chance to go in there and get the number three seed. And yeah. I guess a couple configurations, there's a chance to get number two, but I think that's very unlikely. But yeah, they do have a chance.
Oh, okay. Because I was trying to figure it out because they both got the same record at 11-4, and I know the Rams beat them head to head. But I was just wondering it sounds like, are they conceding that third seed? I mean, are they just, they're comfortable?
I don't know if they're conceding it, but I think that they're taking the position they need to rest, and so they wanted to make sure that they don't overuse Todd Gurley because he's had such a great season. They're protecting their quarterback and Jared Goff. They don't want to have too many injuries, but this could be a rookie gamble in doing so because the third seed, fourth seed doesn't seem to matter to them. I don't think it's a matter of what they're trying to do is avoid playing Seattle if Seattle makes the playoffs or avoid playing the Atlanta Falcons. But regardless, that's a decision that Sean McVay's made.
Yeah, because regardless, you're gonna have to play somebody.
Right.
I mean, and you're gonna be at home.
Right.
Which is understandable. You're gonna be at home. I know it's a young team, young quarterback. It just baffled me because I thought I knew it wasn't just a sheer lock.
Right.
Into that third seed right there, right at that time, and he's making that decision. Same thing for Pittsburgh too. Also, right.
Uh huh.
Pittsburgh and New England are still, if Pittsburgh were winning by any wild chance.
That one's a little bit even more baffling because, you're right. If Pittsburgh can win and the Patriots, and of course, I guess they assume the Patriots aren't going to lose, but then we still have to wonder, are the Patriots going to play all their starters? How are they going to handle things?
Yeah, because, they still have a chance to get that first seed if something wild would happen and the Jets would pull that win off.
Right.
They would be in the market for that, and they're talking about starting Landry Jones also, right?
Yeah, they are. Resting Ben Roethlisberger, they're not going to have Antonio Brown because of the calf injury. Then they are definitely thinking about taking Bell out. So, yeah, they're going to just go with the backups. But, of course, they are playing Cleveland, so they still anticipate even with Landry Jones they can beat the Cleveland Browns. I mean, believe it or not, they're favored by 7 points.
Oh, wow. Woodlander, yeah, well, they're going to be at home also, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah, well, that they could possibly get away with that. I love the little young running back they had from out of Pittsburgh until he got hurt.
Yeah.
I thought he was
James
nice,
Conner? Yeah,
nice,
he's good.
Yeah.
So what do you think of this the Saints season?
Well, was that Mr. Clayton?
What did you think of the Saints season?
Well, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I was very surprised this year that they came out. You know, the way they started the season 0-2 mm-hmm. and got blown out in both of those games, kind of in my position, the way I look at it, I'm very surprised the way Sean Payton brought that team back around to fruition like that to make the playoffs.
Right.
I mean, did you expect that?
No, I did not.
No.
Because I didn't see that there was going to be the improvement in the defense, particularly not adding a pass rusher. But somehow, Dennis Allen's been able to do it pretty well. Now, they still haven't matched up when they've played good quarterbacks. But, you know, they still give up points and all that stuff. But I think they've done a great job.
They've done a remarkable Sean Payton to come back from three 7-9 seasons back-to-back-to-back to turn around and have that team in a position to win the NFC South and in the playoffs already. Yeah, he's done a fantastic job this year as far as that's concerned. Do you have a vote for Coach of the Year, Mr. Clayton?
Yeah, Sean McVay.
Sean McVay?
Yeah.
What would you rate Sean as far as his performance this year?
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. He's had the greatest improvement in offense in NFL history. And when he goes from the worst offense, nobody's gone from the worst offense to the number one offense. And, you know, he's taken a 14-point offense into the 30 range. I mean, the last time anything was close to that was the Rams back when they were the greatest show on turf. And so, and you know, it happens so that Sean McVay's an offensive coach. I mean, he's taken a young quarterback like Jared Goff and won a division.
Yeah, sure. No argument for me, you know, especially going to – nobody expected the Rams to do what they did, too, such a significant turnaround also.
Right.
I got to give hats off to him. He did a real good job. How do you look at Kansas City, Mr. Clayton, coming in? They're locked into their spot right now.
I mean,
now.
I look at them as maybe being the third-best team in the AFC, but there's a big drop-off, I think, from New England and Pittsburgh. And it's funny, I say that even though you look at the number two seeds. I just think that Pittsburgh and New England stand by far better than anybody else. But I realize when I say that Kansas City won the opener in New England, and Jacksonville got a 21-point victory over Pittsburgh, which is kind of weird, but I just think there's a big difference between Pittsburgh, New England, and Kansas City and Jacksonville.
Who's getting that last seat, that last spot over there?
I think it could be the Chargers, and the reason I say that, I don't have great confidence in Tennessee being able to make it. I mean, they've lost three in a row. DeMarco Murray's not going to be able to play. Mike Mularkey, the head coach, could be in trouble if he doesn't make the playoffs, and I know they're playing Jacksonville, and Jacksonville may not do everything with all their starters, but I still look at that defense being able to possibly contain Marcus Mariota, but I think if Tennessee wins, then they're in, but it's like, I still question whether they're going to win. That opens it up for Buffalo. It opens it up for the Chargers.
Yeah, definitely does. I like the Chargers, too. I think the Chargers I love that pass rush the Chargers have with Bosa and Ingram. I mean, those boys get after you. What about the NFC side? You got Atlanta, Seattle, still vying for that last spot. What do you think?
Yeah, it could be. I think Carolina right now is a slightly better team than Atlanta, and even though the game's in Atlanta, I think Carolina and Cam Newton can go in there and win it. You know, Cam can get hot at the right time and do all the right things. I just think that they have a chance.
Yeah, you know, they're still going to be watching the scoreboard.
What if
New Orleans jump up on Tampa Bay 21-0? Would you think Ron Rivera would back off?
No, I don't think so. I mean, he'll play it through. I mean, remember, it's like you got a new owner, and they'd have to be buying the team sometime in the next year. I just think that, that's what I applaud the league in being able to come up with the idea of putting all the games at the same time. Because, I mean, think about how bad it would have been if they would have done the normal thing, have the New Orleans-Tampa Bay game early. New Orleans clinches the division. Now Carolina doesn't have to play their guys because, they would have been probably the Sunday night game. And so that drama, because again, that last NFC spot is the best one, of course, and then Seattle will be hanging out there waiting to the night game to see who, if they were going to be in or out. So I just thought that was the best thing to do. So I thought for the good of the game, they did a great job with that.
Yeah, because I tell you right now, Mr. Clayton, there was a significant drop-off with the Atlanta Falcons this year. Mm-hmm. If you want to call one of your surprise teams, on the offensive side, they had a significant drop-off when they with Kyle Shanahan moving on as the offensive coordinator and bringing in Steve Sarkisian, they didn't look the same like you saw last year. They didn't operate the same. You know, I don't know if it was because of Steve. Maybe he's a different type of play caller compared to what Kyle Shanahan.
Well, let's go one by one here. I mean, is the quarterback the same, Matt Ryan? Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. How about the running backs? They're the same. The three receivers. True. They're the same. Mm-hmm. Okay, the offensive line, pretty much the same. And what's the only change? Steve Sarkisian.
I mean, that's the only way I look at it, because it just doesn't look like what you're accustomed to seeing.
No.
But right quick, what's something besides Atlanta? Did Tampa Bay disappoint you this year?
100%. I mean, you know, it's a – that's why I'm stunned that Dirk Cutter – well, again, I guess I'm not saying that Dirk Cutter should have been fired, but I thought John Gruden was going to take that job.
Yeah, I thought because the rumors were that he was planning on maybe coming back to the NFL, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. What about Cleveland? Do you think Hugh Jackson keeps his job?
I still question it. I hope he does because I like him a lot. But you know, it's I think 0-16 is hard to sell.
Yeah, it is. It's a hard pill. But, you know, Mr. Clayton, also, they did a fire sale right before the season started. Yeah. Joe Hayden and all those boys,
that's where the analytics people, and I mean, that's why I know Jim Moran always questioned me, why am I so hard on Cleveland? When you let about 6-7 starters go like they did and have nothing in return, thinking you're to replace them with young guys, it was silly. You know, they lose, Mack at center. He goes to be a Pro Bowler for the Falcons, and Schwartz at tackle, and you let all the Gibson at the safety position. It was crazy. And then you let Hayden go, and he's had a Pro Bowl caliber season in Pittsburgh. Crazy.
Yeah. I mean,
hey, JB, I got to run here because we had a short show.
All right, Mr. Clayton, Happy New Year,
Happy New Year to you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Raider Jim. Jim, how are you?
Hi, John. How are you?
Hanging in there.
Good. Well, I wish you, your wife, and your wonderful staff there at ESPN 710 a very happy new year going forward into 2018, John.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Same to you.
Absolutely. You know, John, at this time of the year, it's a good time to look back, but also a good time to look forward. You know, I saw last night on NFL Network, and your audience may be able to record it if they haven't seen it yet, but 50 years ago, tomorrow, was the Ice Bowl that was played against the Dallas Cowboys in Green Bay against the Packers.
Right.
And I just thought that was just fantastic, all of the really great information. John, did you have a chance to take a look at that?
I did not, no. I was kind of tied up on a few things.
I'm sure you'll get around to it. It was fantastic, you know. I think it was Michael Meredith, Don Meredith's son, who I guess is a documentary filmmaker, did it, and he interviewed so many great people. I mean, people like out of the past, like Lance Renssel. I mean, when's the time you ever had an interview with Lance Renssel?
I know. It's been a while.
Exactly. And so that was just really great information. I mean, it was 15 degrees below zero. They started off the documentary with talking to a meteorologist and talking about the weather patterns and how they occurred on that day 50 years ago, which I thought was great. And the other thing that I thought that the filmmaker did that I thought was interesting is, you know, like Madden, they didn't talk about Don Meredith's broadcast career. They talked about his football career, which, you know, a lot of people don't know that John Madden was a great football coach,
right,
you know, before he became an announcer. And, they, you know, Don Meredith was a better than decent, you know, quarterback. And, you know, he was a good old Texas kid. And so it was great to get all that great information, John. And if you get a chance to take a look at it, I highly recommend it. My son and I, by the way, got a chance to see it last night. And that's a great thing for parents who, you know, want to give their kids a history of the game as well. So I thought it was just fantastic.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. What do you think about that? I mean, we haven't had a chance to chat about it because of the intervening holiday, but you know, the index card situation with Gene Steratore. I mean, usually he's pretty good umpire.
Yeah.
And I didn't get a chance to hear your thoughts about that. What do you think about that? I mean, I first of all, it shouldn't have to go down to one play in a game. It never should have to go. That's my philosophy. It should never have to go down to one play. You get beat, you get beat. And, you know, there are other plays that accumulate either before or after that play or a controversial play to where a team shouldn't have to depend on one play to win or lose.
Right.
But boy, John, I was really surprised when I saw that they didn't make the first down. I was kind of shocked, and you know, so were the announcers, John.
Yeah, I know, and of course, I mean, it's something that I know that he won't do again because the league said don't do that. I thought it was kind of, because again, his eyes had made the decision, but I think that he just wanted to make a double check, which of course you want to be as right as you possibly can. But yeah, it was pretty weird.
I agree, you know, because Derek is a great umpire. I've never had any.
He's my favorite.
I think you're right. He's my favorite too. But after this game, I'm not sure. I mean, gee whiz. The interesting thing is a bit of qualification with some of the reporting after the event was that, you know, he isn't in the parameters of the rules to do what he did. It's allowed, and it has happened once before, but at least from the reporting, and you know, so that's interesting. But for heaven's sakes, you know, through the naked eye, the guy did not make the first down.
No, no.
And, you know, so I was a little...
There's got to be a little bit of a review of where they are on replay and stuff like that, and also with the officiating, because I thought that the Calvin Benjamin play was just horrible.
It happened on the same day.
Yeah, because again, it's like you got to let the officials call. That's why if you have a guy like Gene Steratore, if you have guys like that, you just let them do their job.
Indeed. Indeed, John, indeed. So you're thinking the Chargers are going to beat the Raiders down in Los Angeles, John?
Yeah, I think so. Now, the question's going to be, is Jack Del Rio going to be back? And I think he will, but they say it's 50-50.
They do say it's 50-50. Here's where I think, and I was on the fence on it, John, just like you. I'm kind of a traditionalist, you know. I mean, look, Mr. Davis has paid out a lot of money. He gave Mr. Del Rio a extension of 4 years, paid out a lot of cash, and is expecting to pay him, you know, for 4 years going forward. But you had five possessions inside the 50-yard line, and you couldn't get it done, John.
Yeah.
And that's not good against a, you know, they're an okay team, but they're not a great team.
No.
And especially without that quarterback. And I just thought, you know, gee whiz, the game was close, and you can't even get a field goal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not a big field goal guy to begin with, but for heaven's sakes, get it done.
Yeah,
and it didn't get done. So it leads me to believe there's a lot that's askew with that organization.
Well, I just keeps changing coaches, and I think he made a mistake by letting Bill Musgrave go because the offense isn't even close to where it was last year. Then they changed defensive coordinators on a defense that didn't add anything. I think they just made too many mistakes, and so it does fall on Jack. And again, I didn't like what they did on defense whatsoever this offseason. They did basically nothing. And now I think they paid the price on it. But then if the offense goes bad, you don't make the playoffs.
And here's where you're great, John, is that you said that all along.
Yeah.
You said that in the beginning. Even during free agency and then with the draft, you were very skeptical. If the draft players had come through, great. But, you know, first and second rounders usually don't have that kind of impact on the team until maybe one or 2 years out.
Mm-hmm.
And so having to rely upon rookies that way is not a good way to build up the other side of the ball.
So they make the draft, and their first three picks are defensive guys. Two of them are injured, and they basically get nothing out of them. And the only player that they signed in free agency was Jelani Jenkins. They put $1 million into a bad defense and two draft choices, and they get nothing. You regress. Simple.
Yes, indeed. And they have a tougher schedule because of their record from the previous year, which is also something you always talk about. So this is not a new thing, and you know, I also think Mr. McKenzie's on the hot seat. You know, I mean, he got lucky with Khalil Mack. Let's face it.
Yeah.
Khalil Mack fell into his lap, okay, because some of the other teams wanted quarterbacks, and that was great for the franchise. I mean, Khalil Mack is fantastic, but I don't think anybody expected Khalil Mack to come to the Raiders.
No.
And he's been a decent fit, but they haven't done anything else with that defense, and that's really unfortunate because you know you need to build with. On both sides of the ball.
Right.
So I think he's on the hot seat too, John.
I think they're
going to probably give him a year. But boy, if they don't do something next year, it's going to it's going to be trouble going forward.
Hey, Jim, thank you for the phone call. Happy New Year.
You too, John. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jim in SeaTac.
Hello, John. This is Jim from SeaTac.
Hey, Jim, how are you?
Hey, we're not trying to make this the Raider Hour, but before I comment, I'm going to ask you about what happened to Derek Carr. But before that happens, I remember, you know, being a Raider fan all of my life, and I remember when Mark Wilson's contract was kind of coming up and was going to be Plunkett or was it going to be Wilson? Of course, Wilson didn't earn the job.
Mm-hmm.
Davis just gave it to him. But I remember there was a bidding war against the Generals and the Raiders for Wilson. And I remember the owner of the Generals, his name's Donald Trump, and he said that he raised the price on Wilson. He says, "We played Davis like a drum."
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking, how dare he say that about the great Mr. Davis? He's our leader. Who is this Donald Trump guy
right.
saying that he got the best of Al Davis? But I'm beginning to think this Trump guy might have some game.
I don't. I'm not going to get into the politics of that because this is a sports show. But you know, I just go back into I remember coming to 1984 USFL meetings, and you know, Trump was just going crazy about how great this is and how he's going to take over the NFL, and so he overdoes it with the team, and the next thing you know, they have the lawsuit, and he ends up winning the lawsuit and getting $3. That's it, $3.
Yeah. No, I'm not talking politics. I'm just saying it's just. All these years later. So what happened to Derek Carr?
I think that they made a mistake by changing offensive coordinators, and they put a very predictable offense out there. A lot of people look at it and say it's a high school type of offense. And so it's predictable, and Derek, I think, has been playing a little bit with that back injury that's affected some of his, not his throwing, but I think that it's affected some of his efficiency. And so you throw all that together, and it all just kind of fell apart.
Well, when you break three bones in a year, does that kind of hurt your confidence?
I don't know about his confidence. His confidence seems to be fine. His efficiency doesn't seem to be as good. But if you're a less efficient quarterback in a predictable offense, I mean, you have a predictable outcome. It's not going to be as good.
Yeah, because I was looking at it, and it was such an explosive offense.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it was fun to watch.
Right.
And they would score three touchdowns in 20 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and it would be like, who can stop us?
Amari Cooper dropped too many passes. I thought the run blocking was suspect. I mean, they got good production out of Marshawn Lynch, but, you know, I just think and that's why change coordinators when you have success? They did it. It didn't work. Now they're paying the price, and if Dorio does keep his job, which I think he will, they'll probably end up firing the offensive coordinator and, you know, seeing if they can turn it around, but this was a wasted year.
Does Musgrave get fired? Because I remember when Carr broke his ankle last year, and they were ahead by 30 points, and I'm thinking, well, so why were you running the Why weren't you running the football? Yeah,
mm-hmm.
a 30-point lead.
Right.
Why aren't you handing the ball off? And I thought maybe that. I mean, I'm not down there. I don't know what that building's like inside. But if I'm the owner, I'm saying, so our quarterback broke his ankle and he was throwing with a 30-point lead.
Yeah.
And why was this happening is what I would say.
Yeah, but regardless, I mean, you know, they fire him, and the next thing you know, the next guy stepping up just wasn't as good. And so I think
not
that they regressed.
Good. So how's the Khalil Mack? Does that look like they'll sign him?
It's going to be tough, but I think they'll get it done. I think they'll save the money to do it. That's why I don't think they'll change coaches, because they can't afford to pay changing coaches. So I think they'll work out. Hey,
right.
Jim, I got to run here. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year's. Bye-bye.
All right. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Darren Urban joins us from azcardinals.com, talking about the Cardinals as they come into town tomorrow. It's the John Clayton Show. Give us a call.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now, Darren Urban, who covers the Cardinals for azcardinals.com. And, of course, kind of a strange season coming to an end. Where did it all kind of go, Darren? It's like, it looks like it's finishing great on defense, which is good, but it just didn't come together.
Well, I mean, there's a few different reasons, and obviously, you know, and there's a lot of teams that are dealing with that this year. But I mean, injuries didn't help when you lose a running back who scored 20 touchdowns and had 2,000 total yards last year, and you lose him before the first game is over, and you lose your left tackle for the majority of the season, you lose your starting quarterback for more than half the season. I mean, among others, the guy who led you in sacks the year before, you lose him in the fourth game. Those tend to hurt. And there were some other things. I mean, obviously, they didn't come together early as much as they were hoping, and I think that cost them a chance to be in it. You know, their defense took about you know, half the season to really come together. You mentioned how well they're playing, and they are playing really well, but they needed that some of that earlier in the year. So there were multiple reasons, but it just, in a lot of ways, it shows you how far this franchise has come. I mean, you've been around the league for a long time, John, and I've covered this team for nearly 20 years, and, you know, once upon a time, 500 would have been cause for celebration for this franchise, and now it's, you know, getting close there, or possibly being 500 is, you know, this terrible season. It's interesting to look at it that way.
Well, you know, and you talk about the injuries, and I have never seen a season like this. You know, as we speak, in fact, I hadn't updated yesterday's waiver wire, but there's over like 420 players that are on some kind of an injury list, whether it's waived, injured, injured reserve, PUP, NFI. Never seen anything like it. I mean, we're basically almost half the league is stuck there between 14 and 21 guys on some kind of reserve list, and that's more than it's ever been.
Yeah, and it's not only the numbers to me, it's the quality of players, quite frankly. And I mean, again, just looking at the Cardinals, you're talking about, you know, David Johnson and Carson Palmer, you know, both are starting tackles, Marcus Golden, you know, when you start piling up all these names, I mean, that tends to obviously impact what's going on. I mean, the Seahawks obviously are going through a lot of the same stuff, especially in their secondary. And it's just something that, you know, the league has to try and overcome, but it's clearly made an impact on the season overall in the league.
Oh, no question. And I think what we're talking about is, I think I was looking at it, is maybe it's 43 Pro Bowl caliber players on the injured reserve list. And, I mean, many, you know, some top quarterbacks. I mean, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Andrew Luck, now Carson Wentz on the injured reserve list. And you're right. I mean, you look over at the Cardinals and, you know, when you lose, I mean, you know, they're one of like about maybe four teams that have three offensive linemen on injured reserve starting.
Yeah. And it's clearly made an impact in terms of how they played. And you know, they had some questions, quite frankly, on the offensive line and how it was going to come together in the first place. So when you add in that, I mean, they felt fairly comfortable that it would be okay. They never really got a chance. I mean, the starting five offensive linemen that they planned and that they had all of through training camp, frankly, but that lasted eight snaps into the regular season before DJ Humphries, the left tackle, got hurt. He later came back, but they had already had multiple injuries on other places. And so their starting offensive line that they plan on played eight snaps together. And that's just not a recipe for success.
Eight snaps for the starting offensive line. That's incredible. It's like you talk about plans and, you know, you just can't plan for that type of stuff. And then, you know, the scramble to replace offensive linemen is impossible. Absolutely impossible. In fact, I was looking at it. It's like, you know, by the end of today, I think there's going to probably be 150 starters that are going to be on in some kind of an injured reserve list. Now, obviously, the guys at the end, when you're only missing one game, it's more just a transaction than it is anything else. But 150 players, but about 40 of them are offensive linemen.
Yeah. Well, and we all know how hard it is to build offensive linemen lines right now, given what's coming out of college and the kind of offense is being played. And that's why, to me, this game Sunday is so fascinating between the Cardinals and the Seahawks, because you've got two teams. I mean, obviously the Seahawks have tried to get their offensive line better, but that's a spot that I think everybody looks at the Seahawks and have kind of waited for a number of years for them to really make a push to make it better. And they've kind of, you know, done little things, but probably could have made more of an effort for the line. And yet you have a team like the Cardinals who have tried to address it, and then the injuries undercut it anyways. And now you're talking about, you know, having to get through a season like that. It's difficult.
And I would imagine that there's going to probably be a redo on the Cardinals' offensive line next year, because, you know, they were so successful in going out, and Gerald Valdir, you know, looked okay at particularly his first year at left tackle. Then Mike Iupati had a Pro Bowl caliber season, but then now both are high-paid guys, and you don't know if they're going to be back or not.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a good chance for this team that there's going to be significant roster change, just with some of the age and some of the free agents at certain positions, and like you said, trying to rebuild the offensive line. I don't think there's any question that, especially offensively. I mean, that defensively, they seem to have come together. They have a lot of good parts in place that are under contract, and they should be okay there. They need to look at that number two cornerback spot, but other than that, defensively, I think they're in pretty decent shape going forward. But offensively, there's a lot of questions. What are they going to do at receiver? What's going to happen at quarterback? What's going to happen to offensive line? You know, those are all things that are going to be heavily scrutinized in the offseason.
You know, and that's why, I mean, this game is so so different, I guess, that when you look ahead, because, again, there's part history involved in this game and part sentiment involved in this game, because, yeah, I mean, you know my respect and all that for Bruce Arians and, you know, Larry Fitzgerald and Carson Palmer and that. And, you know, this could be all their last games, which, of course, I think would be sad for the league and sad for everything. But, I mean, you know, I'm sure their minds have already made the decision, but nobody knows for sure where it's going to go. But, boy, that would be such a significant change to see the Cardinals without those three guys, you know, a couple offensive linemen and others.
Yeah, I mean, clearly the next month or so is going to be very important for the future of the franchise in terms of who's going to be around short-term, who's going to be around long-term. There's no question about that. And that's why, you know, you mentioned this game being interesting. I mean, you know, the Seahawks are playing for a lot. I mean, they need to win to be in the postseason. You know, the Cardinals, you know, trying to figure out exactly what are they playing for. Are they playing to beat a rival? Are they playing to knock a rival out of the playoffs? Are they playing, you know, for guys who might not be around? Are they just playing up a string? And I think it'll be interesting to see that first quarter and exactly how the Cardinals come out and match what I can only assume will be an intense Seahawks team that knows they've got to win to keep their season alive.
I know that they made the move a week ago to go back to Drew Stanton. You know, they rightfully tried to see where they were with Blaine Gabbert, and I guess that you know, the future didn't look as great after five games as you would imagine. But physically, where is Drew?
I think Drew is in pretty good spirits in terms of where his knee is. I mean, I know Bruce Arians said a couple weeks ago that he wasn't 100%, but you know, I didn't really see anything last week when Stanton was playing that you really noticed, okay, he's limited physically. He's about where I have always pegged him, which is much more mobile than Carson Palmer, not nearly as mobile as Blaine Gabbert. He can move around. He's going to, you know, obviously stay in the pocket. But, I mean, I didn't see any after effects of the knee injury when he was in there last week. And so it'll be interesting, again, to see how they handle, again, with a banged-up offensive line with a lot of guys that weren't there for a long time now trying to play at the end of the season, how they can protect Stanton, how they hold up against the Seahawks pass rush, and whether this offense can generate some things.
When you look at the turnaround in the defense, I mean, talk about what young guys have come through that have made this defense make this push where they've only given up 22 points in the last 3 weeks.
Well, it's funny because you mentioned young, but in a lot of ways, I think it's been veterans that have ended up, for one reason or another, making impacts. I mean, I think one of the number one impacts that they've had over the second half of the season is when they decided to bench Justin Bethlett, the number two cornerback, and play Tremont Williams, who's a 11-year veteran in this league, played a long time in Green Bay, you know, was signed as kind of cornerback depth, and he's played really, really well. To the point where I would not be surprised if they try and kept him another year, even though he's 34 years old. You know, whether he would be the starter, I don't know. But, I mean, I think they are going to think about bringing him back. And he's played really well. And then they've had some other things happen for him. They had two guys who were coming off injuries or coming back from major things, which we all know Tyrann Mathieu and what he's been through. He's had a better second half of the season than the first. And he said the other day a lot of it was mental. He was playing more or less trying not to get injured the first half of the year. And him kind of letting loose the second half has helped. And then Deion Buchanan, the inside linebacker who didn't play the first four games after having ankle reconstruction surgery in the offseason, was kind of had a slow start. He's rounding into form. And having those guys kind of back and playing much better football has helped them. And then, of course, Patrick Peterson has been fantastic this season as usual. And Chandler Jones, frankly, in my opinion, I know he won't get a lot of talk because of the team's record, but he's done so many good things that he deserves to at least be in the discussion for Defensive Player of the Year. I know he's not going to get it, but he should at least be mentioned because he's been fantastic, both pass rushing and against the run, and he's just been great.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that's so amazing about football, because, I mean, you look at Bill Belichick and you look at the trades that he's made, and, you know, he's somehow able to take lesser talent and get some things going. Of course, it helps when you have the greatest quarterback all time as your quarterback. But, I mean, you think about, I never understood the idea of trading Chandler Jones, Jamie Collins. I understood that they probably figured they couldn't re-sign them, but they only get second and third round picks. And look how good those guys are, particularly Chandler Jones. I mean, you knew this guy was going to be a, you know, a pass rush guy, and I give credit to the scheme in being able to get even more out of him.
Well, I know, I can tell you this. I mean, I was surprised the Patriots were willing to let him go. I understand the part about the money, but I will also say that having been around this team for so long, Steve Keim and this team had been chasing a legit pass rusher, a younger pass rusher who was going to give him more than 1 year, for forever. And the fact that he dropped in their laps for a second-round pick and an offensive lineman in Jonathan Cooper, who they were ready to move on from anyways, yes, you had to pay him a lot of money for an extension, but for them, he's been worth every penny. And for him to have the kind of season he's had after he signed a contract extension, I think speaks volumes for him. I mean, you know, a lot of guys, they get their money and maybe things, they back off a little bit. He's been... I mean, he's having the best year of his career by far, and he's had some good years in his career, and this is after he got his money. I think that bodes well for the future for the Cardinals and Chandler Jones.
You know, Steve Keim, I think, is one of the best GMs in football. I've always loved the way he does, but, you know, each GM has their own fingerprint, right? I mean, look at Kevin Colbert in Pittsburgh. Whoever's on his staff, or if it's Kevin, I don't think anybody drafts wide receivers better than them. You look at Green Bay. Yeah. They do a great job of drafting wide receivers. Does anybody draft, well, of course, Seattle to a degree, certainly they do it, but other than, say, Seattle, does anybody draft safeties better than Steve Keim?
Yeah, well, that's clearly been something that he's been very good at. I mean, obviously, Tyrann Mathieu, and then, you know, Washington native and favorite son, Buda Baker, has been, you know, I mean, they traded up to get him in the second round. People were like, okay, you're drafting another small safety like Tyrann Mathieu. Why exactly? And he's already proven why. I mean, he's made the Pro Bowl as a special teamer, deservedly so. And since they've had some injuries, he's gone in and played defense the second half of the year, and that's another reason this defense has taken a step up. You can just – his athleticism at his size and his fearlessness has just been incredible. And again, when you talk about a smaller safety, it's just like with Tyrann Mathieu. The hope is that they can stay healthy long-term as they, you know, are aggressive and they're making these plays. But so far, Buda Baker looks like he's been an amazing second-round pick.
Well, you also throw in Dean Buchanan, because he was a very good safety, and then he made the transition to linebacker. And so that's, I mean, it's almost like, you know, he keeps finding safeties that really are talented and good, and that really improves the athleticism on defense.
Yes, absolutely. And again, those, when you name those guys, I mean, now we're talking about some of the most impressive people in this lineup on a defense that has been among the best in the league for the last, you know, 6-7 weeks.
Hey, Darren, looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. When do you get into town? Or are you already in?
No. We fly out this afternoon, so we'll be in this evening about 5 o'clock.
Well, that'll be fantastic. I'm looking forward to seeing you over at the stadium tomorrow.
Thanks for having me, John.
All right, that's Darren Overton, DaisyCardinals.com. And, of course, give us a call at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Short show, Liberty Bowl coming up next. Get your last calls in.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
All right, thanks to Matt Nelson for producing the show and running the show. And, of course, we've got Liberty Bowl coming up next. We want to get to your phone calls at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Mike in Edmonds. Hey, Mike.
Hi, John. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Hey, thanks for doing this, as always.
Well, thank you.
And Happy New Year to you and Pat.
Thank you so much.
Two quick questions for you, and first one needs only 10 seconds of your time.
Yeah.
Who has the best stat line tomorrow, Matt Stafford, Joe Flacco, or Matt Ryan?
I think I would go with... Well, I don't know how, because the Carolina defense, I think, is going to be pretty gear. The first one you said was, I think, Matt Stafford. Matt Stafford, okay. Just kind of throw it around and have a good time, because, you know, his coach may be gone at the end of the day. And so I think Matt Stafford of three.
Oh, all right. And my second question is about John Schneider.
Yeah.
I'm starting to have doubts about him, and let me lay out why I have doubts. As you've said numerous times, the Seahawks have drafted more offensive linemen in the past 5 years than any other team. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, there, I think that's one mark against him. I think he kind of lucked into Marshawn Lynch, and with the exception of Marshawn Lynch, hasn't really found a running back after numerous attempts. Drafted Doug Baldwin early, mm-hmm. and hasn't found a
wide receiver. Doug Baldwin was undrafted. He got him off. He was not drafted at all.
Haven't found a wide receiver yet to match him or complement him really well.
Well, remember, I mean, they had Golden Tate, who was great. And again, you can't keep everybody. No, the guy is really good. Now, again, like any general manager, not everything's going to work out. But, I mean, he may have hit a little bit on Chris Carson. I mean, he'd got something out of Mike Davis. But think about, in the big picture. It's very difficult to put offensive lines together. Two-thirds of the league are in the same problem. But look what he's done in the secondary. He's hit on Shaquille Griffin. He's hit on Justin Coleman at cornerback. And again, it's not easy to find Pro Bowl caliber guys or good guys, but he's really good at what he does. This is still a deep team, and it's still on the verge of becoming, one of the eight teams to have six seasons with 10 consecutive wins. Hey, Mike, I'd love to give you more time, but we got so many calls right now to go to. Have a good new year, and thanks so much.
Thanks, John.
All right, let's go to Victor in Auburn. Hey, Victor.
Hey, John, another great show.
Well, thank you.
Two quick ones. John, new year coming up, same sorry Raider fans. And then would it behoove Denver to pick a young quarterback or sign a proven quarterback? What are the positive negatives? And, John, you have a safe new and happy new year, bud.
Okay, right, Victor. I think it'd be better to get a veteran quarterback. And the reason I say that is that, the window's starting to close on that defense, and the defense is still good. But I don't know how much longer the defense can stay together. Clearly it can stay together the next year or so. But, once you start to lose Aqib Talib and Chris Harris and some of the other guys on that defense, then there's going to be a little bit of a drop-off. And I think that it's better to probably get, I don't know if it's, and I'm not saying that these are the right guys to go to, Eli Manning or Alex Smith or whatever, but they need to get a veteran quarterback because, the cycle could start to get tough if you have to go ahead. They clearly got a lot of issues on the offensive line. That's why a young quarterback, I think, would struggle even next year. They tried the young quarterback move in Paxton Lynch. Clearly it has not worked. I think right now they need assurance. You've got John Elway, still one of the best problem solvers in football. His expertise is trying to get the quarterback. He's tried two things that haven't worked. Now he's got to make this work. Victor, happy new year. Let's go to David in Olympia. Hey, David.
Hey, morning, John.
Morning.
Hey, thanks for always giving us a voice.
Well, thank you.
Hey, and the thing about the Raiders that's really bothering me is the receiving core, when they break on an in-pass, they're allowing the corners and the safeties to break on the ball more than the dang receivers are breaking on it. It's driving Carr crazy. You can see it with his body language.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, honestly, that's where I wonder about the scheme, because, if you're breaking on the ball, then you might know something. And the book around the league is that, people are complaining, or I know other teams are saying, I think maybe even Denver said it, that it's a high school type of offense. And so if you think it's a high school type of offense and you can read what the play is and a predictability to it, you can jump those routes and, that's fine if you do it in one game, but if it happens over a long period of time and it's not fixed, that falls on the coaching staff.
Yeah, and they're not protecting Carr. You can see it in his body language when he's on the field and when he comes off. And I don't like the chummy relationship between Carr and Del Rio. Carr needs to be coached. He doesn't need to be coddled. And I would like to see Del Rio take a more aggressive stance towards Carr on some of these things and some of the other. What I see lack of.
Well, one of the things that I heard is that, and this is where maybe he was a little bit too nice about it, that Carr really wanted the quarterback coach to be his offensive coordinator. And so it's like you can't let the players dictate or push what you think is going to be right, because they let a good coach go in Bill Musgrave, and I think that you see the damage that's done. They're just not as good.
And that's where I think Del Rio's just regressed. I think the team's regressed, and I think it's because Del Rio's initial leadership when he took over was great. The Raiders needed it.
Do you buy the idea it's 50-50 he keeps the job?
I think he's gone, actually. I think he sealed his own fate, because I think Derek Carr's just too valuable. We cannot lose him emotionally on this team. He's way more valuable than Del Rio is. We got to get somebody in there and communicate better with the players and get more out of them.
Well, it's going to be an interesting week, but it's a big disappointment. I thought that, it really, I mean, two of the three teams in the AFC West, I thought were the third, fourth, and fifth best teams in the conference. But then Denver has, of course, been a disaster. Raiders have been underachieving. Kansas City at least won the division, even though it wasn't a great season, had the bad stretch. Hey, David, have a great New Year.
Happy New Year, John.
All right, let's go to Tara in Mercer Island to close the show. Hey, Tara.
Hi, Mr. Clayton. How are you today?
Good, and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. What if we make the playoffs, what is the best scenario you see working for us?
Well, the best scenario, I think, would be the Rams winning tomorrow over the 49ers, and which may not happen because they're going to be going with backups, and then they come back and go down to L.A. and have that division rivalry going against a young quarterback. I mean, if not, then they're most likely going to go down to New Orleans, which, of course, with that crowd and everything else, that could be very, very difficult. So, again, it'll be difficult with the Rams, but I think that even though they got blown away and destroyed, you know, the anger from that and, the battles and stuff would probably give them a chance to maybe, bounce back. So I think the best scenario is to play the Rams.
Yeah, I agree with all your points. And the Rams are still a really young team and a little bit hot-headed. And the Seahawks are a very good team and have lots of veteran leadership in that locker room.
Well, plus you also talk about home field advantage. Yeah. And, the crowd, I'm not saying the crowd's not going to be loud in L.A., but they can be as loud as they want. When you put 65,000 fans in a 90,000-seat stadium, you now do not have I've been down there, and there's just you don't get that buzz going because you can't. And now if you go down to the Saints at the Superdome, you know you're going to hear a lot. It's going to be very loud. And so home field advantage is not as distinct. And what, the Rams, I think, have lost three home games. They've had better record on the road than they do at home.
Yeah, and there might be more Seahawks fans than Rams fans at that game because the Rams aren't filling up the stadium.
Yeah, so no, I think that the better scenario would be to play the Rams.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Tara, thank you very much. And everybody, thank you for this past year. We'll go into next year. We'll be back on Tuesday. And, of course, back next Saturday from 9 to 12. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.